so we took up landscape. That I studied. I took up more myself, landscaping.
Well, I suppose with the tree surgery, you learned a lot from your brother and
absolutely. Absolutely. Of course, he told me things he wouldn't tell anyone else, you know. And yeah, yes, I wouldn't have been able to do what I could, what I'd done without his knowledge.
And so you started that, when did you say?
1929. And we broke up, he got married, and his wife wanted her brother in there. I saw things weren't going to go good. So I got married, and we divided. I'd done a little tree surgery work on my own, not under any name, just neighbors. And they paid me well. Of course, I was depression in the 30s, and if I get 25 cents an hour, maybe, labor, I was getting $2.
And then from there, you got into the landscaping?
I came into landscaping after after the out-of-staters started coming in here. I started the landscaping in, about 55, maybe.
Well, was that when you first started to work for the guy up at the Bundy Gallery?
No, I'd done his landscaping, but I'd been doing landscaping for 6-7 years. I'd done some before then, but my older brother had been doing it right along, too.
Did you work together then with your older brother?
Once in a while.
With landscaping?
Enough so I got the basic.
So he studied both tree surgery and landscaping?
And it goes together a lot, yeah.
I see. Because it sounds to me like you got into it right at the right time.
Yeah. Oh, all those trees at the Bundy, I transplanted those. Oh, they're that big around now. I mean, big maples. Yeah, transplanted all those. Never lost a tree. Maybe all together. 30 bit. I mean, I set up big, that big around, but probably weigh 2-3 ton a piece, you know, when I set them out. And, with a ball of earth you have to take with them.
Yeah. So that was your main kind of work?
That was my work, yeah, my main work. And Mr. Carpenter had seen some of my work and wanted me come to work for him steady and put me on payroll. So that was the end of my landscaping. But I could have done wonders had I stayed with it, because I had no idea that valley going to grow like it did. There was more landscaping work than anyone could do, you know.
Yeah.
And it's surprising how many people are crazy with a checkbook. On some things, something they want. You know, like property. They got if they want that property. They'll pay most anything for it. Some people they don't know the value of money, don't have to. But they'll be so tight penurious over some little thing. It's pitiful.
Yeah, it's the inconsistency Now last time we were also talking about and we didn't get into it too much, the horse racing. But talking about the popularity of horse racing in the area.
Well, it was. That was their gentleman's entertainment. That was my grandfather's age. Of course, my grandfather spent his life racing horses.
He did.
But the sulky. That was all sulky, not respect. Yeah, he still holds a state record, yearling colts. Never been beaten at Burlington.
Yeah. So he'd go all around racing?
Yes, even I had the state fair was, it was White River or Bellis Falls, and they had a mile track, had a mile track there. And that's the only mile track, I guess, in the state, I think so. Most of the rest of them are half mile tracks. Yeah, he went everywhere. He Letty's colt was one that set the state record, and had to use it for brood mare because she, well, of course, she was highly grained, and she started to go through a, so you go and put her in a stall, and there's a little threshold there, a little cleat. She caught her shoe on that cleat. She goes, she high life, you know. Went through and broke her ankle. They healed her up because she's that valuable. Yeah, she was the fastest thing he'd ever seen of all his racing. So he used her for a broodmare. Mm-hmm. And she had a colt, completely black, black velvet, they named her. And Grandpa wouldn't put a mark on, wouldn't put her a mark on her. Because she could win any race, any race he ever put her in, she'd take it. But he's careful not to get a mark on her, because she'd have to, like if she raced the class, we'll say 2 minute class or something like that. Well, you're going to find just a few of those in the country. All the rest are slower classes. So she's racing to get the best in the world, then you aren't going to make any money. You're better off not get a mark on her and take everything.
Now, what do you mean by a mark?
Okay, you win so many races in this class, and you race in that class. Maybe it's 2.5, mm-hmm. 2.8.
I see.
2.20. 2.20 is a good class now. You don't get too many horses much faster than 2.20. If you do, they're champions. You get that mark. You can't race the slower class.
You've
got to race up in your class. So he's careful not to put a mark on her. That way, he'd get free for all. He'd wait for the free for all. And that don't give you a mark. And
I see.
Take them all. Take the money. Yeah, he raced all his life. Mother loved it. She, well, born in her, you know. She, after Grandfather died, she, of course, had the black velvet for her driving horse. She let us kids take it one day to take her one day to go to school, five of us in the wagon. We raced Shawnee Buzzell, meat man, 2 miles. 2 miles, he couldn't go by us. He pulled off the dooryard and stopped. Oh, did we catch hell from Dad. The dad heard about it. You better believe it. Her belly went any further from the ground than that. Missed it. Where she gone? Did the kids love it?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, but we didn't know enough to. She'd go just as long as you asked her to, and we didn't know enough to use her, right?
So there were a number of people that in the Warren Waitsfield area that
had horses. Oh yes, it was. I'm going back, my grandfather's.
Now your grandfather lived in.
Lived in Warren, East Warren, and yeah, his name was Frank. Well, Thomas Frank Williamson. He went by the name of T. Frank Williamson, and he had race horses. Morgans, all Morgans, had a Morgan stallion, and sold him for $800. Back then, that was a lot of money. But he had to take him back again. But he was ugly. Oh, that horse was ugly. He bit me and he kicked me, and I got even.
Now, where was your grandfather's farm?
Right across from the airport.
Uh-huh. That, sort of above De Vries's?
Yeah. De Vries, you keep going towards the airport, go through the hollow, get up top of the hill, and our place joins right on De Vries. And we've sold it now. There was 70 acres there. It used to be 90, but we lost 20 acres. See the fire, Warren, town clerk's office burned. Dad bought another piece off of Daniel's farm. And all they could go by was the older records.
Oh,
so those records are burned. And so they just what people knew about is all he could go by. We didn't have any records. So we lost 20 acres there. So make no difference about that. And that was why, and it went all the way to the corner. Go by William Elliott's farm, towards the one, went towards the dump, to Ward Village, just about a mile down the road to the village. And the other one went over these four corners. And there were the Elliott family. Hod, the name was Edward. He owned the mother farm, we'll say. Joe, which would be Fred Elliott's father, bought a farm over where Fred is. And then George, Rudolph's brother, took the farm over afterwards. I guess some DeVries boys own it now, I think.
I think so. How old is Rudolph Elliott?
Same age I am. Yeah. We went to school together in East Warren, 1917. We moved over to the East Warren farm because of polio in Waitsfield, the infantile paralysis.
Oh, yes. Well, Everett
Palmer's family went all through the whole family.
Brother.
Carrie died, yeah. He was going to graduate another week. Yeah. For high school, yeah.
That was he told me that story.
Yeah, Carrie. Huh. He died, and guess he's the only one that died. Yeah, but it left Mary Moriarty crippled. Mm-hmm. Life for Jocelyn completely crippled. I mean, like about one leg, and just never grew.
Yeah.
They're the only two that, and Dwight Palmer, Everett's brother, left his foot in like this. But he could run, play baseball, and it didn't seem to handicap him at all. But you can see he was affected a little bit by it.
Yeah, well, Everett remembers his mother saying to her husband, "Do you think we're going to lose them all after the first one got polio?"
Of course,
I mean,
of course.
Just.
Yeah. Yes, you see, 1917, Everett was 9 years old. Yeah. So he would remember the whole thing.
Oh, he did, yeah. I mean, it was obviously one of the...
Yeah.
Yeah, when I saw him recently, he hadn't made much syrup at all.
He's making some now. It's ideal over the last 2-3 days.
Yeah.
I mean, ideal. The days are, sap isn't running all that long days, but it's at first it came in a gush. I mean, it came out, run fast. But this last 2-3 days, yes, kind of snowy. Otherwise, it would quit completely. You know, just rainy weather just don't run very long. But if snow mixed with it, sometimes it's just enough nippy in the air so it'll run right through a snowstorm to beat the cars, you know.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I was asking about your grandfather and racing.
Oh, yeah.
But you said that there was a guy up, I think, in Faiston, who raced?
Yeah, Will Nelson raced. Mel Waterman, Waitsfield Village. Lou Palmer, Jewel Palmer, down below Waitsfield, where Hudson lives. Where?
Paul.
Paul lives. He owned that farm. He had Morgan Sagans and that, like, you know. He raced horses. Will Freeman. Gabe Senor, he was one of the biggest trade swappers. This is back in my grandfather's time, of course, with my grandfather, Frank Williamson. And what the heck is the name? That name of the man? Wilson Avery? Yeah, Wilson Avery. Yeah.
The selectman.
Yeah, right. They were the main ones. I probably left out somebody. Of course, Earl Fuller, but that's another generation.
Did his father race Lodger?
No.
No, just Earl.
He's strictly a farmer. The boys didn't appreciate the Father too well. Well, they got in trouble. The boys got in trouble all the time, and the old man had to pay up or keep them out of jail. And their excuse for it was he never give them a damn thing. And the only way they get anything out of him was to get in trouble. He'd have to pay it up. I don't know if that's the truth or not. But they'd go out bumpy and they'd buy a beautiful team of horses, resell it, keep the money, and they try to collect off from them, and the old man has to pay up. They pulled some good ones. You'd heard about it.
Yeah, I heard about one the other day where, I guess it was Rudolph Elliott. Earl was talking to his mother, I guess, and she said that they were all out looking for a cow. And Earl said, "I'll come help you," but he had the cow in his barn.
Yes, Earl had a cow for sale. Steve Johnson, but they were always more or less each other's throats anyway. Steve Johnson, he'd run a feed store. Steve wanted a good cow, and Earl said, "Probably I got the cow you want. It's the best cow I ever had." He said, "Probably it's the one you want. You're going to have just one family cow, you know. You want a good one." Well, Steve would look it over. "I'll bring it down," he said. Brought the cow down. He'd take the bicycle pump and pumped her bag up. Well, she had the biggest damn bag. Steve bought it.
Oh. I heard he also complained about it.
Yes,
and
did.
Earl said, "I told you she would give the best little bit of milk you ever had."
some remark like that. Where else could you have heard that?
I just cracked up.
Yeah, I couldn't. I didn't know about it. I just heard about it, so I wouldn't know the whole thing. It could be a lot more added to it.
Yeah, Everett Palmer was the one.
Oh, yeah.
He was funny. Well, you told me also, I think, that there was racing up on Waitsfield Common then as well?
No.
No.
No, not Waitsfield Common.
Not Waitsfield Common, but up above, didn't they used to have a 4th of July celebration or?
They still do have in Warren. I wouldn't wonder if there's a little racing up there, but racing was on the fairground.
That's what I meant, yeah.
Down below Waitsfield. That would be it's an airport now. And, no, it isn't. It was an airport. Don't know what they do use it for now. The polo ground, they play polo there.
Oh.
Right. But anyway, there's racing there, and then they used to have racing on the Philip LaRue's fairground. That would be just above the Catholic Church in Waitsfield.
That's all grown up now.
But they had racing there. But a lot of the racing right on the main road. Not for prizes, but for ego, dignity. There's a better word for it, but I don't know what.
That's true. Well, you probably have other.
Of course, speaking of East Warren, the settlers, the Elliots, and all the people that lived there, this was a little before my time, but Mother remembers it well. There was a family of Agans or Egans, Tom, and I don't know what his wife's name was, but we called her Biddy. Tom and Biddy. And they were Irish. And they did love a fight. I mean a real fight, not just a spat. Stand toe to toe and slug it out. Biddy'd hold her own pretty good, but if she ever licked, she'd go to the authorities and have Tom arrested. Then they'd fight the judge. And one judge in particular, one lawyer in particular, in front of the judge, was running Tom down, and he said, "You tell by the looks of him. that he's a woman beater, and that lawyer, I can't tell you, it seems like his name might no difference what his name was. Anyway, one of the homeless men you ever saw in your life. And he's pointing his finger at old Tom. He says, look to him, he's a woman beater. Tom says, I'm as good looking as Jay. Well, anyway, Chris dropped the crowd down. Judge kicked them out. Got why they wouldn't even pay any attention to him. But they had a family, they had quite a few friends there. Of course, they were Irish Catholics. And there was families of Foleys and Sullivans. And there's a few Catholics around. Enough so, Tom, coming from the barn in the wintertime, had a heart attack. And he laid the snow, and Biddy didn't miss him for a while. When she did miss him, went looking for him, he was frozen stiff. But the Irish Catholics have a wake, this tradition. And they believe they got Oscar Eaton for an undertaker from, I believe he lived in Waitsfield at that time. And of course he didn't embalm or anything back in those days. Anyway, Oscar, they had to have the wake, so Oscar tried to straighten him out the best he could. I don't know if they had caskets back then or just a box or whatever, but just whatever they had. But he put a weight on his feet and a weight on his shoulders. So I tried to straighten him out the best he could. So anyway, they had their wake, and about midnight, they was dancing and having a good time. Everyone happier than a clown, you know. Someone suggested giving Tom a drink with the crowd. So they gathered around, took a glass, put it to his lips, and someone had him by the head and put it to his lips and dislocated a weight somewhere, upset old Tom in the casket, the box. I guess it didn't take long to clear the room.
So he just rose right, sat right up.
He just sat right up. Well, he shot down it quick, and all that weight come off. Up he came.
Well, you told a wonderful story last week about the couple. The woman wasn't too pretty, and her pants fell down.
Oh, I'd have to mention names. I wouldn't want to.
All right, okay. That also was a.
Yes, that'd be nice. But we. Yeah, you were mentioning the Moriartys, and yeah, there were families in Warren Moriartys. They were Catholics, and we're speaking of the Catholic population there for the wakes and that like. Walter Moriarty, Waitsfield, ran a sawmill. He and his family, they were Catholic. But then there was another family of Moriartys, Charles Moriarty. He died young, and his family, his mother, more or less, and the boys themselves propped themselves up best they could. Don Moriarty was one of the greatest high school pitchers that they'd had at all. He went down to University of Vermont. I think Dr. F.S. Kent, later with State Board of Health, guided him, helped him through college some, and he also pitched Montreal baseball for money to get through University of Vermont. Don had an offer, Boston Red Sox, but Dr. F.S. Kent advised him, he's being a doctor and he just got married, his wife was a doctor, and they both had good positions offered them in Massachusetts General Hospital. So he advised him not to give up baseball. It might last just a few years, and with his arm, depending on the arm. There was a point here I had when I was telling that. Anyway, oh yes, and I don't know. I've seen many big league pitchers, but none amazed me any more than perhaps it was the talent which they were against. We used to have fairs in Waitsfield on the Fairground, LaRue's Fairground. And this fair was run by Warren Grange. And they'd have the 3 days of the fair, the baseball game each day of the fair. At that time, there was the Warren Cubs were going strong. I believe they won number one trophy from the National Biscuit Company in Burlington, state of Vermont. And they played the first game of the fair. I believe it was Rochester, but I'm not sure. They won. Wastefield won. And they played the second game of the fair, and they won whoever they played against. And they were playing a team which was an organized team of Dartmouth College the June before, but it split up. But they'd got together and was going to play the Warren Cubs on the fairground. But Warren had run out of pitchers, and someone knew Don's address anyway. Just probably many of them did. So they got hold of Don Moriarty and asked if he'd come in and pitch for the hometown. And he did. I'm going to tell you, when Don came on the ground, they had a band waiting. They had a band waiting, and oh, what a welcome they gave Don. Well, they got in the ball games started. These guys, they were up here in the sticks. They were going to have some fun, Warren Cubs. This first man looked at three balls, went sit down. Three strikes, I mean, sit down. That went on. It went on to about seventh inning. I've missed a part of it. We didn't have a catcher that could hold Don Moriarty. So there was one in Rochester, Vermont, John Trask. He thought he could do it, and he done a beautiful job of holding him. But the seventh inning, on the third strike, the guy swung at it and missed it by a foot, but so did Don, so did John. So he got on first. John didn't pay any attention to him, let him jog right down to second, let him jog third base. He kept working on the batters. That was the end of the ball game. When it got 9 innings, it was still whatever Warren had to nothing. And, well, it was one of the nicest games I'd ever seen, because he didn't have that much talent, but some of those college boys are good ball players. And I was working on trees, a tree surgery, and I was down in Bellis Falls, eating lunch, my brother and I. And here were two guys talking about a ball game. They went up the sticks to play and run out to a man they never saw anything like their life. And this was the game I've just told about. And here's the guys down there still talking about it.
That's terrific. What a great story. Yeah,
that was Don Moriarty. He was something else. Mm.
Well, that's the other thing I've heard, is that Warren really did have a good baseball team.
Well, they hired. They hired all over. Rutland, yeah. Yeah. I didn't know the names of the... Had two people from Rutland. They had a Barry Mumphrey or Rutland. They didn't have a few men in Warren. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it went by the Warren Cubs. Started out with a Warren team. Red Witch was a substitute.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, yeah. I saw a picture the other day. Les Irish had it. Yeah. Showed me. So you know who that is? No. Red Wakefield. Yeah.
I have a great picture of actually Red Wakefield fiddling.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, I played double fiddle with him a lot. Red and I played an awful lot together. Missed that guy.